Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Michael Franti here, and I am super, super excited today because, you know, normally I have musicians on this show, but today's the first time that I have a chef. And I like to feel like music and cooking are very similar. They're the two things that would universally, unanimously, worldwide bring people together, celebrate life. And when we celebrate life, it ain't always easy. There's highs, there's lows, there's ups and downs. And Brandon Kostowski is somebody who knows about highs and lows. He knows about food, and I'm sure he knows something about music too. I want to introduce him to y'all and welcome to the Stay Human Podcast. Brandon, how you feeling?
Hey, Michael, I'm feeling really good, man. It's above 60 degrees in Cleveland, and that means that's an excellent day.
Nice. Anything above 60 is like, that's like the tropics, right?
It is.
So for those of you who don't know, Brandon started an organization called Edwin's. And why don't you just jump in and let's hear a little bit about what Edwin's does. And then I want to talk about you.
No, you got it. So Edwin's, man, its highest level is really hope and a way to achieve it. It's a 6-month training program on the outside. That's helping men and women coming out of our criminal justice or injustice system, and how you look at it, find their pathway in this industry, culinary arts and hospitality, to the top. And so for 6 months, someone just gets immersed in business basics. They get immersed in food safety and sanitation. You look at the history of food. You work every position in the restaurant. So you cook the fish. You also make the dough. You work the bar and you serve tables as well. And, at the end of these 6 months, you come out with a laundry list of people waiting to hire you, not just in Northeast Ohio, but around the country, because, our mission spread quite far. And I think that what one would consider the most unique, and, I would consider just, kind of par for the course is we care. We care a lot. We have a campus committed to someone if needed. So we have free housing. We've got about 4, 5, 6 buildings. We have graduate housing. If someone's in need after they graduate, for like $200 a month, we have a fitness center, a library, a butcher shop, a bakery. So, you can learn deeper those two skills. And we just added on family housing here about 2 months ago. And so now we'll be able to accommodate families trying to change their lives. That's it in a nutshell. We do this inside a prison as well. We're in about a dozen prisons. We know that it's dark inside. So between this large hug, of being outside of prison and inside of prison, we just offer the opportunity for someone to be who they want to be.
That's awesome. And especially in light of everything that's happening in our country today, mass incarceration and systemic racism, all the things that we see that are on the front pages of the news right now. It's really amazing the work that you guys do. And we'll get into more of that later. But before we do that, I want to talk about you. So tell me about where you grew up. What was your family like when you were a kid?
Grew up in Detroit, Michigan, Outer Drive in Van Dyke, which is like 7.5 miles. Anyone familiar with the city would know it's not the prettiest part of town. Had a great childhood, man. Ran around with kids. We played. We did what we did. We moved out of the downtown, kind of like the inner city of Detroit, to a suburb. To like the more formative years, and it was such a change, I think, in life. Seeing going from one place where you're like the minority to a place where it's like you got to keep up with the Joneses. It was really kind of an unusual switch in life. Single mother, 3 boys in the family, so she was always working. Her goal was to say just graduate high school and stay out of prison. And she was just happy for us that if we were healthy and happy, right? I mean, that was it. There wasn't really a high expectation. So, I mean, I can't really complain. Childhood was great, man.
What did your folks do?
My mother was a court reporter. So she was the one typing up deposition at the in the courtroom. My father, I think it was like engineering or something like that, something of the engineering type. He worked for one of the motor companies around Detroit. There's many of them.
So you grew up at 7.5 miles. Then now you move to this whole other part of the city where you know, you're kind of looking at the kids going, hey, I'm not wearing the same kicks as they are. I'm not I'm not driving the same car as they are. And what did that lead you to as, like, as you said, in this formative, is you talking 12 and 13 or more into high school? Or
Yeah, exactly. It was just different, man. I mean, like, it's hard to analyze it now. You know, I just turned 40. You look back at it. But even in the moment, it was just uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like, we were the poor kids in school, okay? We were like the hillbillies. And it was like, that's what, I don't know. You weren't accepted into someone else's circle because of what you look like, which was kind of weird because, you know, anytime my grandmother still lives in, you know, lived in Detroit before she passed. But, like, you know, still going back to Detroit, it was like, people don't give a damn. You know, it's like, you know, come as you are and do your thing. And it was just weird, man. It was just weird. It didn't make any sense, I guess. It was just confusing. It's like, okay.
I get that. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in a neighborhood and in a family. In fact, I was adopted into that. I felt like I didn't totally belong all the time. And there was half of me that was like desperately trying to fit in. And there's another half of me that was like, fuck it. I'm trying to just rebel and be who I am. Did you feel that kind of push and pull as a kid, or were you just on one side or the other, or you just didn't care?
I don't think I really gave a damn. I just, you know, just kind of did what it was and just, you know, got through the day. I think it was until, you know, I fell into a crowd, you know, now we're talking like, you know, 16, 17, 18. I just fell into the crowd of trouble. And, you know, that was comfortable. It wasn't out of rebellion. Like I had to piss someone off because, you know, again, mother wasn't like, you have to do this or do that. And that's where I think, you know, that's where I felt most comfortable.
So when you say you fell in with a group of kids who were getting into trouble, you mean like trouble with the law, trouble in school, just.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, just, you know, school, you know, school's for fools, man. You know what I mean? Like that kind of mentality. Yeah. You know, I wasn't a drug user, but, you know, a drug dealer. So, you know, would sell, just like, again, it was a circle also where now it didn't feel like there was an expectation or an acceptance policy, right? You came as you are and, you know, the tougher, the better kind of thing. That's where I found myself, you know, in my story, on the other side of the law, you know, I got arrested and was facing 5 to 10 years in prison. And that's kind of the seed of what Edwards is based on.
So tell me about that. Do you want to share what you got in trouble for? Or?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's been publicly documented. I mean, there's a film that went to the Oscars 2 years ago. I mean, I think most of the world has seen if they follow, the Academy Awards, what it is. It's, you know, the charge was fleeing and eluding. You know, essentially we had drugs on us and we all, you know, we all split and they couldn't pin us on the actual charge. So, you know, they get you on what they can. And that was fleeing and eluding. I was, you know, like I said, facing a stiff sentence and, you know, spent a couple nights in county jail, which was, you know, an experience, you know, you never forget.
Tell me about that. What was that like for you?
You know, it's like getting processed. So the whole experience, you know, I can reflect on it pretty well. It was just this idea of being just, you know, taken, right? So that, now your freedom's gone, right? And you really don't know what freedom is until you lose it. I think it's a really important lesson. So I'm glad this all happened. And then you're processed like this, like choice meat, you know? Not even like select meat, like choice meat. And you just go from, you know, cell to cell or jail to jail. You're kind of just given a, you know, a throw of an outfit and it's like, there you are, you know, sit down. And just like that whole process felt like, you know, really, really, really cold as it should, you know, your freedom's gone. That's what it is. And on the other side of it was this, you know, encounter with a judge who ends up giving me probation instead of prison. And, you know, to this day, and I'll speak, you know, speak to it. It's, you know, for two reasons, you know, the grace of God. And I believe the color of my skin. If I look different, I would have got five. If I don't believe it's something, you know, the higher power looking out, I think that I wouldn't have done right with what happened next. And what happened next was I ended up meeting this chef in downtown Detroit. And he's the guy who mentored me, changed the outlook of what I could do as a human. And that set the path forward.
So then at that point, did you finish high school?
Yeah. Barely graduated. I had to take an extra class at the end of the day, cut into basketball practice, which really pissed me off, but and finished up. The encounter with the chef was like, you know, pivoting to that is, you know, he taught me this idea that perfect practice makes perfect, you know, with a skill set and, you know, fundamentals elite skills. You can do anything you want, and that's in fact what happened. I you know, left Detroit and went out to school in upstate New York. The Culinary Institute of America is the name of the school. I then apprenticed under Charlie Trotter in Chicago and flew to, you know, France after that in a one-way ticket and started, you know, hitting this, you know, the restaurants in Paris, and eventually ended up in New York City. And I thought I was gonna be the best chef in the world, you know, because that is the world, right, man? Like Manhattan.
and Paris, yeah. Let's talk about food for a second. So practicing food, you know, perfect practice makes perfect, as you said. But what is it about food? What is it about the soul of food that drew you into it? Why food? Why not something else?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes you listen to your body and it just something resonates with it. And there was a draw. I mean, I was in the kitchen. It was magnetic. It was energetic. It was finally an industry that could, like, or a place where I could, no matter how much energy I had or have, which I had a lot, it would always, you know, push back. Right. So just the terrain that you walk on in a restaurant, it just screams hard work and energy. Right. And if you're cut from that cloth, it's going to resonate somehow, some way. You know, the food aspect, I was just curious about, right? I mean, it's this natural curiosity. I'm a pretty curious guy, probably like yourself. You're always, you know, you have a question, you figure out why. And something was not only, it wasn't only a curiosity in the kitchen, but there was like this fulfillment once I found the answer. And the fulfillment was coming from the earth. And to me, like the relationship between, you know, the land, the earth, this world, the natural world and a human is like, there's nothing more greater. And then what your hands can do to manipulate or enhance a product to nourish and feed a human being, it's like the coolest art in the world, right? I'm sure it's the same thing that is for when it comes to music, someone's ears and how it feeds their body and their soul. It's the same thing with food. But to know that this, you know, Britannia lobster came from the shores of Normandy, and, you know, to preserve its character and the tradition of a certain region for hundreds of years, you can capture that for a moment and, you know, serve it. So then I just became this like curious, like, oh my goodness. Okay. So what's the extremity of this thing? And where's the soul of it? And that's what kind of led me to these restaurants around the world, is just seeking the soul of this product.
Do you remember the first time that you made a dish in a restaurant and you sent it out and you saw some feedback? Like, you looked around the door to the kitchen, you saw, somebody's eating that and they're enjoying it. Or maybe somebody came up to you and said, man, this is great. This is the best whatever I've ever had. Do you remember that first moment where you caught that kind of feedback?
You know, I do. It actually had to be lobster. So the kitchen, Michael, you're getting your balls kicked in there, man. Like, there's no breath of air to kind of look around the corner, or, you know, it's just like you head down, you rock and roll. And, you know, maybe a server or a manager comes back and says, hey, the guests like the food, and that's like the highest. But there was a time that I wanted to learn how to cook lobster, and it was in Detroit. And I went out and got some live lobsters from the market around the corner, and it's called Eastern Market in Detroit. And I got these lobsters, and I said, well, chef, can you show me how to cook something with them? You know, and he showed me how to cook something with them, and I ended up, you know, really taking it seriously. And I went back and cooked it for my uncles, who were some, funny guys, man. I mean, you know, you talk like your Motor City kind of guy, you know, a drinker, a smoker, and, you know, the bigger the car, the better, and just a great personality. And I cooked these lobsters for him. He couldn't believe it. And I was really proud. You know, I said, hey, man, you know, that's right. And then looking back now, it's probably an awful preparation. I probably hammered the damn thing. But
but they were stoked, man. They weren't exactly foodies. So now you're giving this feeling to people who have been incarcerated and who are coming to you as maybe, you know, a last chance, or maybe in their mind they're thinking, like, you know, I'll just give this a shot or whatever. Everybody's coming into it with a different reason. But you're bringing them this thing that you can do something that makes other people feel alive. You can do something that connects you to nature. You can do something that connects you to your team around you. You can do something that gives you your freedom back because you're able to pay your rent or own a home or to work at the highest level of being a chef. That's incredible. So how did you get from just trying to strive for that yourself, like go working in the top restaurants in the world, and now at what point did you say, hey, I got to give back?
Yeah, so it was, I mean, I remember this vividly. It was like 55th and Park. I was on my way to Le Cirque. It's a restaurant there, and or was a restaurant there in the Palace Hotel. And I got a call from back home. A young man named Quentin was the guy I came up with in the kitchen, right? Prepping food. Like we made mayonnaise together, man. We made like Caesar salad dressing. We cut red peppers. And it was like the innocence of your kitchen life going, you know, that's where you lose it, right? On those certain like basic things. And he was my wing. And the chef that mentored me called me up one day and he said, Quentin was murdered. He was, stabbed, I don't know, 2-3 dozen times and found an abandoned building. And I just remember him being like, just like the salt of the earth kind of guy. And, it put me back a step and I was starting to reflect on where I was, copper pots, $10,000 bottles of wine out of Detroit, living, alive. And then, you move on because that's what life tells you to do. And then no more than like 2 weeks later, he calls again. The sous chef that I was also with was killed over $5. And I said, this is really fucked up. I said, there's got to be something I can do about it. It's just, I'm just a doer. And so I said, I'm going to build this restaurant. And that's a school, just like, chef had for me. It's going to be focused solely on people, who are looking to excel in this culinary world that didn't get the chance or was overlooked because of certain reasons. And I'm going to build it, right? I mean, that's it. That's what you do. The problem was no one ever built it before. And there was no roadmap. So I went back to school in 2004 to write a business plan. And then just started working on that plan everywhere where I was weak for 10 years, just listened to people who were smarter than me. I focused on Cleveland, Ohio, because it was the worst city in the country and, really still is in the metropolitan cities. It's just distraught with, not just the poverty, but the things that inflict, that come with poverty and it's terrible. And so that was it, man. It was a journey. And the journey was not easy. It still isn't easy, but it was the right fight.
What were the hardest parts of it when you got started?
I think the hardest parts, I mean, Michael, you might find this true in music. I don't know. I don't know too many musicians or people on your level, but I mean, the hardest part is yourself, I think. And knowing that's what you're supposed to be doing. Once you find out that you're convicted and you need to do this, right. And then, just listen to your body and go. I mean, the hard work, finding the money, raising the money, getting the space, all that stuff happens, man. But like, I've been homeless before during this time and trying to build this, nothing, divorce once. And you say to yourself, is it worth it? And then something inside your body says, yes, it is. It is worth it. And I think just once you accept that this is what once you accept what you're supposed to be doing, whatever that is for somebody, you stop talking your body, your mind out. Your mind talks your body out of it. It's easy. I think that's the biggest challenge, because once it becomes your mission, then it becomes life, and then that's why you breathe. So I think that's the biggest challenge. Once you commit, you're good.
You went from opening the restaurant and starting to train people, but when we first started talking, you said you've got homes, you've got library, you've got exercise program, you've got all these different things. At what point did you start seeing that you needed to meet people in their whole life? It wasn't just about just cooking, teaching somebody how to put a dish full of food out there, but you needed to really support people's whole lives.
Yeah, that just came from, this is all thought through and that original plan. I mean, I think there's things that accelerated it, but I just looked at my life and I said, what did I need to succeed? And I just, then you start to think, what do you want for people you care about? Like if, your kids got accepted to Stanford and you wouldn't expect them to live in a shelter. I mean, that's just unrealistic, right? For any parent. So why should it be the same for, those that we serve? There was moments that accelerated it in terms of, someone was sleeping on a couch or in a car and and you know that happens, but when it starts to happen to someone that you're putting through the mill of how to you're asking someone to memorize the grapes of Bordeaux wine or how to make a hollandaise sauce, and then they're going back to an unsafe or unsound. That to me wasn't right or just, and it's the responsibility as a leader to provide that for someone if that's what you're in the business of, serving others. So that really accelerated the housing. The education was just, I never forget the feeling I got when I walked into the library at the Culinary Institute of America, and I thought everyone should feel that sort of way. They should all be able to walk into a room and believe they can do anything because there's knowledge around them. And it's a place to learn safely, and be proud of. We have, like 6,000 cookbooks. I mean, it's pretty sweet. These sort of things accelerated it, and then, but it was always the seed, is always the kernel to build the best culinary school in the country, because we're looked at as half as good. When you have a criminal record, or even people that are black or brown, we're it's like you're looked at as discounted, and we have to punch harder and higher just to be considered equal. So you got to create space, and you got to create a sharper, smarter human being.
When you started going into the prison system, were you met with resistance? Were there allies there within the system who were like, hey, we're looking for people like you to do stuff? Or was it like you were clawing and scratching on the door going, hey, I got this crazy wild idea, let me in?
I think it was all of the above. I happened to meet someone, he's same age as I was, so he was about 30 or 31 when I started going to the prisons. He was the same age, and he was considered young for his position. And his sole goal was to make that prison, the best prison with the programming of education and development for an institution. And so when I expressed to him what I would like to do, his first response is, we don't have any money for this. And I said, it's okay. I'm just looking for access. I just want to do this to do this. And then it was like open arms. I mean, I had the keys, not literally, but figuratively. And what I started to do next was just to teach, right? Teach to the top, the same lessons, the fundamentals, the things that you could do anywhere in the world if you learned them right, the first time. And I think what clicked for the prison system was the men that were being taught there were being released and not returning, and they were getting employed. And then access started to increase. And I started to bring our own knives into prison. I started to bring, things that you would not typically be allowed to bring to a prison, but you can't teach the elite skill without the right tool. And they understood that. So there was a bit of a chance I think they took, but it worked. It still works.
Tell me about someone that came through the program who you thought, man, this person is never going to cut this. And they surprised you. Are there stories of people who just absolutely turned their whole lives around?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some turnaround stories, but the first thing I never do is never, I'll be honest with you, man, I'd never cast a judgment on what someone's going to do. Because, like, as humans, man, we can do the most, like, heinous things, and we can do the most amazing things. Like, we're powerful creatures. And so I never say that it's not going to happen, but there's times I scratch my head. I'm like, dude, I'm like, this guy, we'll give someone a couple chances. There's some things that you cannot do in this program, right? You're out. You're gone. I mean, if there's violence, you're gone. Like, there's no exception. Okay, there's no room for that. Someone raises their voice, gets in an argument. Like, let's talk them down and then talk about it. And like, let's move forward and give them a chance. Or, and we're always trying to find solutions. And there was this one guy, man. I said, by my account, he should be out of this program. And I was talking to one of the chefs. I said, I'll put it on you if you want to keep him here. He's up to you. And he gave this guy a ton of chances. And he's still been with us off and on for since we opened. And that is one guy who I thought would be a real difficult person to help achieve their goals. I really did. And he's still doing it slowly but surely. He's doing it.
That's awesome. Talk to me about that, about the goals. You mentioned creating a life plan. What does that mean? What is a life plan?
So the whole program, you understand, like, we're not asking about your offense when you get into the program. Right? There's no cameras. It's, I'm not taking state or federal dough. This is a program that is committed to having someone get to where they want to be.
And the only measuring stick for that is what someone wants to be, right? So, you know, in the first couple of weeks, you're asked to write a plan about where you want to be in, you know, a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is, what's your plan, right? Essentially, your measuring stick, you know, throughout this program. So, like, if you told me, Michael, you want to be a astronaut, but you kept coming, you want to be a chef on a space shuttle, right? And I said, yeah, all right, man.
That actually is what my goal is.
I would say, let's do it.
I'm just working this music thing until I can get into your program.
Well, everyone needs a side hustle, right?
Yeah.
I would say to you, that's a great goal, and I believe you can do it. Okay, and I really would. I really would, because I don't know what's inside you and what you can do and that can do. But if you kept coming into class late, I would say, look, you know, based on your life plan, man, you want to hop into a shuttle. Like, if the thing's got to leave in like by 5 p.m. and you're late, you're not getting on the shuttle. So let's work on your attendance. Why can't you get here on time? Like, what's going on? And then we work through these things. We understand that it doesn't happen in one time. We understand that, you know, relapse is a way to recovery. You know, people who are you know, struggling with addiction. All this stuff we get, man. Like, your life plan's got to be your guiding light. And this program does no good if you're not achieving your goal. It might do good for us. And like, yeah, we got him in a great restaurant. But some people want a hot dog cart, you know? Guy came through this program. His father's a paraplegic, and he needed flexibility, and he liked hot dogs. And you know what? Now he's got a hot dog cart, man. Like, good for him. Like, that's where we wanted to see him: happy, flexible, taking care of family, and earning an income that he can live with. Yeah, that's what it's about.
I think that's really amazing. You know, I grew up, like you mentioned, basketball practice. I love basketball. I still play basketball all the time. There was a point in my life when I thought maybe I wanted to be in the NBA, and I tried, and I played basketball, you know, at college. But there was also a point where I realized that this isn't my path and that there's something more to it. But so many of the things that I learned on the basketball court as a kid about practicing and hard work and, you know, learning to dribble with my left hand, learning my crossover, learning how to follow through on a jump shot, learning how to box out, learning how to sit on the bench and cheer my team on, learning when I get in the game to be ready, show up to practice, all those things, they're still things that I carry with me now. And I just think it's amazing that you guys are doing this for people who are really advanced stages in their life and are finding those life skills through cooking.
Yeah, you nailed it. That's what it is. And you know, no matter how old you are, like, there's still a heart of a child behind you. Like, no matter what, it's the same thing that makes a kid happy, or the same thing that makes an adult happy. You know, acceptance, validation, encouragement, all these things, man. I mean, you know, we're just doing it. Some of us just doing it a little later.
Yeah. Who staffs Edwin? Is it people from the program there, or is it people who come in and volunteer? Is it a paid staff?
Yeah. So it's like a mixture of all of them. So the restaurant and, you know, the bakery, the butcher, these are, you know, they're all like, the students are doing the positions of, that you would in a typical restaurant, right? Hosting, serving, bartending, you know, pastry chef, et cetera, right? They're doing all that. I've got, you know, two instructors, one who focuses on culinary and one who focuses on hospitality. And so for every day you're taking a class, depending on where you're at in the program, dining room or kitchen. So you're taking a class from these instructors. You're learning to top these skills, like, so, you know, from, you know, the wines of the world, and the drinks and spirits and how they're made, and the steps of service, and how to, you know, what true hospitality looks like and feels like, and the kitchen, all those great fundamentals of sauces and stocks and techniques of cooking that you can take anywhere in the world, right? So those
teachers, you're making me hungry, man.
these teachers are really getting it done on that level. There's a group of chefs, right? And the chefs are, you know, kind of the core staff that, you know, run the restaurant and, you know, make sure that it's, you know, doing what it should do, with the understanding that there's people coming through here with little to no experience that are trying to do better. So, you know, we get it, and it all works. The bakery and butcher shop have the same setup. You know, there's you know, a main person, a pastry chef, or a butcher, and a general manager for each store. So now who fulfills those roles? So like right now, like, the butcher and the baker are completely graduate run, right? So my goal is to continue to take this everyone's got a perspective, and taking someone with the perspective of incarceration And our program are the ones who get the first call anytime there's a position open. And like right now, the whole organization, so all of these chefs and managers that I mentioned, like 60% are graduates. And, you know, obviously 100% of the staff that are, you know, in the program are students, right? So the organization, like, I'm just trying to build this thing to reflect who we serve, built by those that we serve. So that's who it is. Yeah, I mean, everyone's on the staff level, they're paid. On the student level, you're paid a stipend. Like, you don't owe us anything for this. We're gonna pay you to go through the program and, you know, help provide whatever's needed, overcome whatever problem that you're having that you want to tackle. And that's really how the program rolls.
That's awesome. And is it a nonprofit? Do you get donations, or is it run through the sales of the restaurant, or a little bit of both? Or
it's a little bit of both, man. But I have Edwin set up as a nonprofit. So internally I take those accounting books and make sure I split up what costs are restaurant and what costs are program. And the restaurant runs at a profit, and the profit goes to offset the cost of this, you know, $1.3 million hole for the school that we have to fill every year. And, with the bakery and the butcher shop, those are like nonprofit LLCs. And anytime that kicks a profit, it goes up to a foundation that I started. And the foundation helps fill the hole of this, you know, this gap that we have to do the free education with. And so, you know, there's still a gap, man. I mean, speaking, consulting, fundraising, all these sort of things take place to make this impossible thing work.
Mm. And if folks wanted to donate, or if they want to go and eat at the restaurant, is a great way to probably donate too. But if you want to donate from anywhere in the world, where can they do that?
Just go to edwinsrestaurant.org. And then, you know, our website, edwinsrestaurant.org, you'll find, you know, information and facts and then a way to contribute. So sometimes it's sending us a book, you know, sometimes it's donating your time. And we got some great, I mean, from professional athletes to, accomplished politicians. I mean, we have so many people come through here that share their perspective that help our students grow. And it's just a constant pressure. So, you know, money's great, man. Don't get me wrong. That's what we need to make and pay the bills, but don't limit yourself, you know?
You know, in America today, we have over 2 million people incarcerated. And if you count everybody who's on probation, it could be close to a number like 10 million people who are in the system. The last question I want to ask you is kind of dovetails off that. Prison in America is one of the most inhumane places. The system is set up, you know, with systemic racism in its DNA. And yet you've been able to find humanity there, and you've been able to hold on to your humanity. So my question to you is, what does it mean to you to be human, and how do you stay human?
Well, I mean, I suppose what it means to be human is to, is to serve, you know, if you're alive and, you know, have breath in your lungs and are able to do something maybe someone else can't for whatever reason, you know, that's what it means to be human is to serve. I think what continues to make me human is continuing to serve. You know, I think that's the way of staying human and being human is to serve.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for being with us today, Brandon. I'm super inspired, and I can't wait to come eat at Edwin's next time we play in Cleveland. I'll have to bring my guitar down there, and we'll get some little jamming going, and then I'll teach you a tune, and you teach me how to cook something good.
Deal.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. This is Brandon Krestowski. Brandon, just tell everybody once again where to go to find you guys.
All right, Cleveland, Ohio. Edwinsrestaurant.org is the website. Tons of more information there. But, you know, if you're ever in the CLE, just come on by.
Hey, man, thanks for being such a great example of how to give back and how to continue to shine your light. And right now, with everything that's happening in the world, we need more people like yourself who are doing these kinds of things. And also just to be able to light that fire in each of us to find that way that we can serve, like you said. So thanks a lot, man. And thanks for being on the Stay Human podcast. We'll be joining you next week with another great episode. Until that time, stay human.